We're broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios. Visit MTE.com. Middle Tennessee Electric. Serving to make life better since 1936.
This is WGNS Action Line. Now your host, Scott Walker.
This morning we're joined by Dr. Leah Fassinger with MMC, and you were just recently hired there, right?
Yes, I actually just started last week, and I'll start to see patients this coming week.
And so what are the things that you'll be focusing on?
I'm a family medicine doctor, so comprehensive care throughout the lifetime. I start seeing kids at MMC 6 and above and through the rest of your life.
So that said, you're going to be with some patients literally throughout their entire life.
That's the goal, yes, sir.
In that kind of practice, it seems like you're going to get to know the patient a lot better, which is always a good thing in medicine.
Most definitely.
So what made you want to go this route to become a doctor?
Yeah, so that's actually related to why I'm here today for Breast Cancer Awareness Month. My mom was diagnosed with breast cancer when I was in middle school, and spending time with her during her doctor's appointments actually made me interested in becoming a doctor myself. I saw how impactful that relationship could be and how much of a difference a physician could make in a family's life. So I decided to go to med school.
It's wild how over the years, how many people cancer touches. I mean, if it's not you who suffer from it, you're going to know somebody. It's going to be a family member, a close friend. But the numbers are just outrageous.
They're staggering.
Are you going to have an additional focus on helping cancer patients?
I think I have a lot more empathy for cancer patients as well as their families, which is important as a family doctor to be able to care for the whole family. But I'm not a breast specialist, just primary care doctor.
And what will be the average age group that you'll be working with?
So at MMC, pediatricians start to see newborns, and they will keep them through 5. So I'll take over from 6 and above. So any older than 6.
Throughout the time that it took for you to get to this point, what were some of the medical stories or the medical things that you came across over the years in training that kind of touched you?
I think a lot of the most touching stories that come to me have been about families, when I've been able to see a really sick parent and care for their child and get to grow with them for a couple of years. Residency for family medicine is only 3 years, so I got 3 years within a family, and I'm hoping to lay roots and be able to build much longer relationships with families from here on out.
Because Murfreesboro is kind of a melting pot. I mean, we've got people from all over the world living here, and it didn't used to always be that way. I mean, it used to be basically a rural country town of sorts, you know, back in the 1940s, 1950s or so. Then it's grown. The numbers are crazy as far as the population growth, and it's going to continue to grow. But that being said, where do you see yourself in the future? I mean, do you see staying with a practice like MMC for years to come?
Most definitely. So I'm from Nashville originally, and my plan is to be in Middle Tennessee for the rest of my life and my career as well. My husband's also a physician in training, and we really are excited to be back here, back home.
It seems like it makes more sense for a physician to practice in an area where they know, a practice in an area where they grew up, because you're going to be more familiar with the different sicknesses that people have, the allergies that people have, all that stuff.
Definitely. And you're tighter with the whole community and feel more engaged by the whole community.
Is there a list of things or a list of hobbies, things that you enjoy that may come into play in some way in your practice?
A couple of the big things that I really enjoy are lifestyle modifications that I talk to all of my patients about regardless of age. I love to get outside with my husband, my puppy, and go on hikes. And there are so many in Middle Tennessee that are just absolutely gorgeous. I love to play soccer, so that's a family thing that we all like to do together. I also love to cook. Something that I've talked a lot about with my patients is how nutrition can really change our lives for the better, finding ways to make healthy food still tasty and exciting.
Going back to what we started with just a second ago, and that's talking about your reason for practicing medicine, you know, what got you into the thought of practicing medicine, and that's breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And it was a very personal story that involved your mother. In what way did that impact you to make you say those words, you know, I want to do that. I want to be a doctor. I want to help people going through things like this.
Actually, my family's doctor was the most impactful physician with my desire to become one. I saw all kinds of different specialists, but it was our family doctor who would check in on my mom and check in on me and my little sister, check in on my dad and see how we were all functioning together that really made me say, wow, she cares about not just my mom's breast cancer, but how that impacts us as a family unit. That made me feel like I could make such a big difference as a doctor.
One of the things that I've noticed that some doctors don't do, and maybe it's just a lack of time because they're seeing so many patients, but a lot of doctors don't slow down enough to really talk out what that patient may experience next or what that patient can expect to happen next. Is that something that you plan to really give attention to?
Yes, that's my plan. I think that's a really important part of the relationship with your primary doctor. Specialists in particular may not see someone throughout their whole lifetime, but for a family physician, my goal is to follow you for decades and decades. I really do want to foster that relationship, help you understand what you're about to go through if you have a test coming up that you're worried about, or to walk through results that you may have talked with a specialist about, but still have some questions.
I think when you're able to fully explain in a way that a patient can understand and grasp whatever that diagnosis is, I think when you're able to explain that to them in a way that makes sense, it makes a huge difference. It dwindles down on the anxiety that you may be going through at the moment. That's actually a really big thing.
Very important.
How big of a problem are things like anxiety right now?
So prevalent. We've seen a huge increase in anxiety and depression, both for a couple of decades, but especially since COVID and social media have become so prevalent, there's been a big increase.
I feel like a lot of things changed throughout that COVID period and then what came after. Mm-hmm. I think a lot changed. And in the world of medicine, what changes have you seen that you plan to really be a part of or to implement?
A big thing we were actually talking about this morning while waiting to talk with you about all of the hesitancy that patients have been experiencing and how much scary stuff there is in social media, online. It's really important to have a good relationship with your primary doctor to be able to ask those questions in a safe space and know that you're going to be respected and hear their opinions, see some good research.
There was a time period during COVID where patients were actually scared to go to the doctor, and they put off going to the doctor, and that may have meant putting off a diagnosis that was just around the corner. Maybe they didn't realize that at the time, but it's not good to put off going to the doctor, at least not for an annual visit. You should keep that up.
Correct. And I'm glad you brought that up. That's actually something we saw associated with things like breast cancer risk. When people weren't getting their annual mammograms, we saw things getting discovered later, which is really scary for your prognosis and also for your options of what kind of treatment we can offer you.
So that idea of going to the doctor for an annual checkup, it's important for a lot of reasons, but that 12-month period in between, is that usually, if you go annually to the doctor for that checkup, are you giving yourself enough time to get a proper diagnosis to where whatever it is that you may diagnose them with hasn't just spread throughout their whole body? Or do things like cancer spread that quickly?
Things like cancer can spread faster than that. So it's important not just to go for your annual checkups, but if you have concerns, to schedule an appointment, to message your doctor through the portal and say, hey, I'm really concerned. I have this new thing that has popped up. Can I get in to see you? Or are you concerned about this? And then we can go from there, because things can pop up faster than that 12-month mark. But 12 months is a good check-in point.
Again, with us this morning, Dr. Leah Fassinger at MMC, or Murfreesboro Medical Clinic. And your office is in the location on Garrison Drive near Medical Center Parkway.
Yes, sir. The main campus.
What are some things that people should look out for or be aware of this time of year, or just really in general be aware of, maybe things you're seeing increases in?
This month, our focus tends to be on breast cancer awareness. That's something that we really focus on throughout October, not just at our office, but pretty much around the country. October is a big push to make sure people remember to get their regular mammograms. this time of year, we also see a lot of vaccine and a lot of need for vaccines. Yes, back to school, the weather's starting to get cold, so we're indoors a lot more, closer contact, so lots more viral things going around. So talking to your doctor about, do I need vaccines to help protect myself, my family, and someone who may be around me who's immunocompromised.
I know. I suffer from allergies year-round, but it seems like every time the seasons change, they're 10 times worse. And I guess that's probably true for a lot of people in the South.
Definitely. And we live in a hot spot for allergies.
Yeah. Yeah. I've noticed that for years. But going back to the cancer diagnosis, are cancers in general, are the numbers going up?
Yes, we are seeing increases in a lot of the kinds of cancer. So breast and colon are some of the ones that I've seen big increases in of late. But we're seeing, in general, increases in lots of diseases.
Is it our diet? I mean, what is causing that?
So there are lots of theories. Somewhat, we're getting better ways to detect things. Okay, some it's absolutely diet and lifestyle choices. So we're not eating as much fiber as we used to. We're not moving as much as we used to. And then there's a lot of fear around all of the additives, chemicals, whether that be in our food or exposure from the environment that we may be getting.
And when you talk about lifestyle, the choices we make and living that daily life, we only get busier. I mean, I haven't experienced a time where we've slowed down as opposed to getting busier. But how important is it to slow down? How important is it to make sure you're eating the right foods? And how important is it to give yourself a vacation, you know, time to relax?
It's crucial. And I want to make sure that people are giving themselves that time, not just during a single vacation every year, but that you're checking in with yourself regularly. Have I slept enough? People really don't emphasize how important sleep is. That's when your immune system really has time to kick in and find those cancer cells and try and get rid of them and fight. That's when our immune system fights colds. That's when we consolidate memories and learn things. So sleep is very important, not just relaxing once a year.
And sleep is one of those big things where you either get enough of it or you don't. And with people's schedules today, I would imagine a lot of, probably the majority of people, don't get enough sleep. Is that 8 hours of sleep, is that still what the medical field calls for or suggests?
Yeah, so somewhere 7 to 9 is what most adults need. Kids need more than that. But that is something that I see very few of my patients actually getting, and it's something I talk to everyone about.
It seems like with prices going up on literally everything under the sun, you've got some folks out there working second and even third jobs just to make ends meet.
It makes it really hard to prioritize that sleep, but I want to emphasize the importance of it for your health, your physical and mental health.
If you're somebody who is moving 24/7, you feel worn out 24/7, and you're really only getting, let's say, and this is crazy, but let's say 2 to 4 hours of sleep each night, and that continues for months on end, what's the end result look like?
Someone who gets sick. Someone who's coming to see me, not for their preventative stuff only, but because something's going wrong, the engine's breaking down, and they really need some kind of intervention.
When that does happen, I'm sure the person in their mind's thinking, I'm just worn out because I'm doing so much. It's not because of, I don't sleep through the night, which should be, I guess, the first thing you realize. But the problem is the aftermath of all of those things put together. The problem is, I would assume, when you're not getting more than, gosh, 4 hours of sleep at night, you're doing some bad things to your body, especially in the long run.
Definitely. That's why it's important to prioritize, even though it's very hard to do so, getting that sleep regularly.
So if somebody comes to you and they say, you know, look, I feel like I'm scatterbrained all the time. I can't remember this. I can't remember that. I can't seem to stay on task. I think something's really wrong with me. And then you realize, wait a second, you're only getting a few hours of sleep each night? I'm sure for you, a light comes on and that's, okay, well, this is the biggest problem here. You can solve this. Is it hard getting through to the patient to make them understand this really is happening because of your lack of sleep?
Yeah, it can be. I think it's easy to forget the basics. It's easy to forget that it's important to sleep, to eat well, to move well, and have time to recoup. So it's easier to think there's something wrong with me that a doctor can give me a pill for and do a quick fix, when sometimes it's really just finding a way to prioritize that sleep and rejuvenation time.
it's almost like we live in this 10-second world of information where we feel like we have to not only get everything the minute we order it, if we're on Amazon or somewhere, but we have to be able to conquer the day within 5 to 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. And we get our news in 10-second sound bites as well. But that's not really the way to live properly.
Mm-hmm. The quick fixes often are just that. They're quick, but they may not fix underlying problems.
So when you look at preventative medicine, you know, those two words put together, there's a whole lot to that. I mean, because when you boil it down, going back to the sleep issue, you know, I mean, there's things that people can do to prevent a lot of illnesses, but what are some of the other things we can do?
As far as preventative care, checking in with your physician on an annual basis or more if you have other risk factors is really important, because we can talk through all of the appropriate screenings for your age group, your risk levels, talk about things like immunizations, ways to protect yourself from illness.
I notice some people try to diagnose themselves, and they'll even go to the doctor and maybe even have a printout from Dr. Google.
Mm-hmm.
And they think they're convinced they have something seriously wrong with them. But how often than not is the situation where it's not some real serious medical problem that just happened to be what popped up on Google?
I think we're seeing that a lot right now, especially with AI. People are finding relatively rare medical conditions that they think that they may have. And that's why it's important to go to your doctor and figure out, is that accurate? Or did I just happen to click some words that AI keyed in on to make sure that we're treating you appropriately?
Seems like it'd make more sense just to go to the doctor annually, not start Google searching every itch or sore back, as opposed to coming up with all these weird ideas that are not correct. Seems like it'd make more sense just to go to the doctor once a year.
I would love that. But I'm also realistic, and I know that we have these instant boxes that tell us things, and people are going to reach for them. So if you have a good relationship with your physician and you've scared yourself by looking something up on Google or using AI, it's important to then talk to your doctor about those risks and your concerns.
And I guess really that all goes back to that 10-second world soundbite where you think you have to have the answer right away, mm-hmm. or you think you're figuring out the answer overnight, you know, mm-hmm. just by looking at something on Google. But you're more than likely getting the wrong answer.
Sometimes, yeah.
What would you say to somebody who comes to see you, and let's say it's a mom, a dad, you know, parents with two kids, and they're trying to figure out how to get on that right path, that right plan, in order to live healthy without spending a fortune?
So there are lots of ways that we can do that. The first is just going back to the basics, making sure that we're eating well, sleeping well, and getting some movement in. I know exercise can be a triggering word for a lot of people. I don't care what that movement is for you, but something you like to do and can sustain doing, whether that's taking the whole family on a walk or going to the park and riding your bike, something that gets you active. Dancing, for example, is one that I have a couple of patients who really love to do. There are lots of ways that we can do affordable foods, whether you have a small little garden on your porch in your apartment, or you're buying affordable produce and cheap staples like dried beans, and finding ways to make those healthy foods that are affordable, more delicious, but still fueling your family.
I think I broke out in a cold sweat just talking about exercise. On top of mom and dad showing by example to the kids, these are the things you should be doing. And by going to the doctor, that would be one thing that is showing by example. These are things that we need to do as we grow up. Because if you don't have that example, well, then the kids aren't going to do that when they get older either.
Yeah, that makes it really hard. We teach so much to our little ones just by example.
Again, Dr. Leah Fassinger with us this morning with Murfreesboro Medical Clinic. We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, let's talk a little bit more about breast cancer and screenings and things like that. We'll be back in just a second.
This is WGNS Action Line. Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers for 78 years.
WGNS is powered by Middle Tennessee Electric. MTE's EV Ready program provides members with $50 in bill credits toward the installation of wiring to support 240-volt charging in their garages. Learn more at driveev.com.
This is Peter Demas, and our family is inviting your family to come eat with us at Demas's restaurant. Demas's has had a bar when we opened 35 years ago. And we've done the exact same thing with our bar menu that we've done with our food menu. We get higher quality items, higher quality cocktails. And some people just want a drink with their meal, where they might be able to get a drink to complement their meals. You need to check it out, so come on over right now. Bemis's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street. We really focus on value.
Hey, this is Dan with Music World and Drummer's Den. Come in for your guitars, keyboards, drums. We have you covered. Our prices will normally meet internet prices. We also have PA and DJ equipment. Some lights, yes, we have that covered too. You can come rent a PA and sound system, do your karaoke, and bring it back. Come see us at Music World and Drummer's Den, the one-stop shop where you have everything that you might need. 2762 South Church Street, right across from the golf course.
Gather around the radio and the computer, kids. It's the Recycled Minute. Rocky the Raccoon's here with another clever way to make recycling fun for everyone.
Rocky the Raccoon here, thinking green as always.
Here's Rocky.
Another idea for what to do with plastic bottles. In addition to recycling plastic bottles, you can also use them as planters for vertical gardens. You cut them open lengthwise and then you hang them on a fence. And then you fill them with soil and small plants. Great for growing herbs, flowers, or strawberries. Looks pretty good too. I'm Rocky the Raccoon, and I'm out of here.
And that's today's Recycled Minute with Rocky the Raccoon. Find the closest place to recycle near you by going to recycleright.tn.com.
Here's another good recycling song.
I'm a trashy little bottle, don't throw me away. Give me a brand new life, I've got more to say. Paper cans and cardboard to recycle right. It's all on you.
We'll return to the conversation with Dr. Leah Fassinger from MMC, the Murfreesboro Medical Clinic, in just a minute.
We break in with traffic, news, and weather bulletins anytime. Good Neighbor Talk is your 24/7 connection. WGNS, Murfreesboro.
Back to that conversation in just a minute with Dr. Fassinger from MMC.
Donating is easy at America's Thrift Stores. They're proud to partner with Make-A-Wish Middle Tennessee to help grant life-changing wishes for local children battling critical illnesses. When you donate gently used clothing and household items, you're giving more than stuff. You're giving hope. Every donation helps Make-A-Wish bring joy to a child right here in Middle Tennessee. Drop off donations today at the new location in Murfreesboro at the corner of Middle Tennessee and MLK Junior Boulevard. Learn more at americasthrift.com/Murfreesboro.
This is WGNS Action Line. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
This morning, we're talking with Dr. Leah Fassinger with Murfreesboro Medical Clinic, and you're at the main campus, which is over there on Garrison near Medical Center Parkway. Before that break, we mentioned talking more about breast cancer and breast cancer awareness. That said, at what age should women start being aware of breast cancer? What age should they start paying closer attention to those things?
If you are low risk or average risk and totally asymptomatic, it's something to start considering around 40. And depending on the guidelines you look at, we recommend annual screenings. If you're low risk, definitely start thinking about it in your 40s. And I do recommend an annual mammogram.
In your 40s, you go to the doctor for that annual exam. Do you bring up at that point at age 40, you know, hey, this runs in my family, a little concerned, what should I do first?
I think that's something that's important for your primary doctor to know about you long before you're in your 40s. So we may start testing significantly earlier based on your personal risk factors and your family risk factors, even if you are totally asymptomatic. So, for example, my mom, I talked about earlier, was diagnosed very young. So I start screening at 30, and mine's actually every 6 months. So it's really dependent on risk factors. So the average population may start at 40, but if you have risk factors, you need to be talking to your doctor much earlier than 40.
And when it comes to the mammogram, obviously I have no clue if that hurts. Is there pain involved? I mean, what happens there?
It's not a comfortable process, but it shouldn't be painful. So we essentially have to kind of press things enough to get a good picture and visualize the whole tissue, which is hard to do through the x-rays that are used for mammogram without a little bit of compression. So it's not super comfy, but it is so worth it to try and avoid having a cancer diagnosis really late when you're symptomatic and have all the other scary complications that come along with advanced breast cancers.
In those cases where somebody does receive a positive, you know, end result, you do have the signs of breast cancer, or you do have that first symptom or sign of breast cancer, what usually is the first thing you do at that point?
That's when you call your doctor and you say, hey, I noticed something unusual. Can I be seen? So that's when it's really important to have a physical exam by an experienced practitioner. If you're noticing things like skin changes, dimpling, kind of like the skin of an orange that has little dimples along it, if you notice any discharge from your nipple in particular on one side, any bloody discharge or something that is unusual for you, if you're noticing changes, lumps, bumps, all of those are reasons to get seen.
Outside of the genetic disposition, outside of mom had it, grandmother had it, outside of those types of things, are there some people in certain groups that are more prone to it? And when I ask that, I mean, like, if you consume alcohol on a regular basis, if you smoke, if you had breast implants, are there certain people who may be more prone to developing breast cancer?
Most definitely. You hit on a couple of them. Heavy alcohol use, smoking use are two of them. Having extra fat stores can increase your risk of breast cancers as well. So maintaining a good weight, avoiding smoke exposure, and heavy alcohol use are all very important.
Well, it does seem like the number of people who smoke has gone down. The number of people who picked up vaping has gone up. And then alcohol use. I have no idea what the numbers are today, but just looking around, it seems like more people are drinking than they used to. But I don't know if that's true. What are you seeing?
So I'm absolutely seeing a huge increase in vaping. And we don't know what the long-term risks of that are. We do know a lot of short-term risks that we've seen very quickly that we don't see with just smoking a cigarette. But we don't know the long-term risk of vaping as far as cancer risk, which is usually something that develops over a long period of time. But I do caution people that I think you're putting yourself at risk.
If you're somebody who is vaping on a regular basis, because it does seem like those who do vape, they vape a whole lot more than people who smoke cigarettes because they're taking to work with them. They're hiding in the bathroom vaping because you can't smell the aftermath of vape versus a cigarette. So people are getting away with it. But that's not a good thing at all. So if somebody is vaping every day, however many hours a day they're vaping, what are some of the things if they quit right now, what are they going to see as far as their health improving, and how long will they start feeling slightly better from quitting?
It's hard to quit anything that you're addicted to, vape being one of them. But we can see improvement in health scores pretty quickly after you stop using substances that are harmful to the body, after you get over that initial period of withdrawing cravings and all of that. So I can't give you an exact time frame, but if we can get people off of it long term, I think that is so much better for them. They're less addicted to something, spending lots of money and time on these products that make them more anxious and put them at risk for significant lung pathology as well as all the other diseases we just don't know enough about yet as far as their relationship with the vape.
If anything, right off the bat, maybe the first 3-4 weeks, they should be able to breathe better, I would guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then with breathing better, hopefully that means sleeping better too.
Absolutely.
It's wild how one thing, one bad habit, it trickles down and all of a sudden you have 10 things wrong with you because of that one bad habit. But it's also
affect everything.
I think it's equally amazing how quick the human body can recover from those things if you do stop them.
Mm-hmm. Especially if you do it early.
With breast cancer, making people more aware of breast cancer, what are some other things that women need to be thinking about?
I always want you to be thinking about your exposures as well. If you, for example, had a history of breast cancer or chest cancer and had radiation, that's something that we need to talk about. If you were a heavy smoker but you quit, that's still important for your physician to know as a risk factor, even if you're not actively doing it. And now with all these weight loss drugs, we have folks who've lost hundreds and hundreds of pounds. So while your risk absolutely decreases for all kinds of health conditions by losing that weight, are you more at risk because you had that weight. That's an important thing for your doctor to keep up with.
I'm glad you brought up the weight loss thing because it seems like a lot of people are taking shots now in order to lose weight. Mm-hmm. And I think there's probably a lot of benefit to that. I mean, I don't know, but is it safe to lose that weight, to take that weight loss shot? But is it better for your health to go that route as opposed to, first of all, doing nothing? And second of all, getting rid of that excess weight. What does that mean for the long term for that person's health?
So the long-term weight loss, as long as we can sustain it, is incredibly impactful for your long-term health. What I think is the most important thing to remember is that these are not quick fix meds that just all of a sudden make the weight come off and stay off forever. They're tools that we have in our tool belt to help us learn better habits with diet, exercise, sleep, to be able to live a healthier lifestyle so that we can maintain that weight loss and get all the health benefits of being at a lower weight.
Is eating healthy just as important as that good night's sleep that you mentioned?
Absolutely.
Do people realize that?
Some do, some don't.
I mean, you've got some folks out there who are so busy that they can't fit in a full meal even once during the day. At least that's what they think.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make time for it, though.
Definitely. It's very important for your long-term health to still be able to be here and keep that busy lifestyle you like.
Yeah, I don't know how some people do it. I'll see them. They'll go throughout the entire day, and they'll eat like one protein bar, you know, and that's it. They stop there. How unhealthy is that? I mean, because you got a flip side to everything. So if you eat too much, that's unhealthy. If you eat too much of one thing, that's not good. If you have one protein bar a day, how bad for you is that?
Horrible. It shuts down your metabolism. If you're starving yourself long term, if you're not giving yourself good nutrients, your body goes into a stress phase that makes you hold on to whatever you do eat to say, oh my gosh, you know, there's been a horrible drought and there's no food available. All of the animals have died and the crops have died. So historically, it makes sense if we were only having that amount of food that our body would hold on to those resources and have all those stress hormones engaged to give us the extra fight ability to try and go longer distances and find that food source. We don't live in a food scarce environment though. So to starve yourself just means that we're causing damage to the body unnecessarily. So it's important to not eat too much, but also to make sure that you're eating enough and that you're eating enough nutrient-dense food.
Continuing the idea, the conversation on breast cancer awareness, when women get to a certain age, menopause, premenopause, are those ages where they need to start thinking about more so the idea of preventing breast cancer or testing to make sure they don't have signs of it?
I think we need to start thinking about preventing all types of cancer much younger by all the lifestyle things that we're doing and making sure that we are treating our bodies as the temples that they are. Our beautiful machines that are incredibly complicated. And if we're not treating them as so, if we're not maintaining them, then things can go downhill really quickly. But yes, your increased risk of breast cancer the older you get. So that is something we need to continue to pay more and more attention to as you get older, but I want you to start paying attention younger.
And what are some of the other things we also should be looking at or looking out for in regards to ourselves at certain milestones in age?
Pap smears for females are another thing that we start around 21. So making sure that you're getting your regular check-in with your OBGYN, your family medicine doctor, whoever is your care provider for that. We also have started colonoscopies a little bit younger now. So colon cancer screening, we've seen incidence of colon cancer jump up substantially. So 45 is the new 50. If you were a smoker or a former smoker relatively recently, we do CT annually to try and find cancers that may be brewing in your lungs. So there are lots of ways that we can try and check on you. So that's why it's important to come for your annual checkups and make sure that your doctor is paying attention to these milestones as you're hitting them.
And while there may be more diagnoses of things like breast cancer or colon cancer, is it because of poor diet choices or is it because you're testing earlier?
It's hard to say exactly a single cause. I think it's multifactorial, but I think a lot of the changes in our lifestyle are definitely affecting our increased incidence of these diseases. And not just cancers, but also things like blood pressure and diabetes and lots of other stuff.
And how important is the educational aspect in learning how to live properly, maintaining that healthy diet, getting the right amount of sleep? But how important is that education of that patient knowing and understanding all these things?
It's huge. You'd be shocked by how many people come into me and they say, hey, doc, I'm really trying to eat healthy. But there's so much that you can find online that says it's healthy that may not be evidence-based and backed by science. So having that educational component from a trusted source is impactful for their whole lifetime.
Again, our guest today, Dr. Leah Fassinger with Murfreesboro Medical Clinic. And as we close today, it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, the full month of October. That being said, what are some of the highlights you can give us or let people know what to look out for, when to come in for testing, and when to start thinking about that breast cancer? Hopefully you'll never have it, but start putting that into the back of your mind that, hey, this is a real thing that a lot of people get diagnosed with. I want to make sure I don't. Talk a little bit about that. And again, what age should people start getting that mammogram?
About 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer at some point in their lifetime. So it's really important that we're screening as early as we can, as far as evidence shows. So for an average risk woman, that's starting around 40, and recommend doing that every single year, so an annual mammogram. If you're high risk, that's something you need to be talking about with your doctors beforehand to try and decide when you need to start your screenings, okay? Things to watch out for would be lumps, bumps, changes to the skin, discharge, pain, or just some new symptom that you have questions about or you've noticed on your breast. If you do have questions or if you would like to get scheduled for a mammogram through MMC, we do have a comprehensive breast cancer. There are two ways to schedule. One is through our website, which is mmclinic.com, and the other is to call and schedule. Our phone number is 615-867-8040.
Okay. And for those who are listening, insurance, you know, in order to make sure insurance does pay for that, I'm guessing they can't just say, hey, I'm going to go get a mammogram. You need to go to the doctor first, right? In order to say, hey, this is something that runs in my family. I'm a little concerned. And then that's the route to take.
If you're at increased risk, you do generally have to have something written by a physician. But insurance tends to be pretty good about paying for the screenings that are well backed by evidence. So getting your annual mammograms starting in your 40s tends to be pretty well covered by most insurers.
So I guess the bottom line is insurance does want to work with the idea of getting a mammogram early, because obviously you're going to have a better chance of not only surviving, but going through less treatment.
Definitely.
With us this morning, Dr. Leah Fassinger with Murfreesboro Medical Clinic. And once more, your office is at the one on Garrison Drive here in Murfreesboro. And if anyone has any further questions, you could start, I guess, with the Murfreesboro Medical Clinic website or make a phone call to MMC.
Yes.
Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having us.